You f- dip. I can't believe I put up with this. And I asked for a grape soda, you asshole. Okay.
Due to a labor dispute, CITR is missing its star voice actors. That means if you're interested in producing PSAs, advertisements, and various other promotional wonders for airplay on the radio, we need you. Learn how to get involved with CITR's production department and all other facets of volunteering at CITR and Discorder Magazine at CITR.ca. Programming, photography, media training, and more. Plus, a guest star in the lounge. No, wait, we can't promise that.
Can't believe I put up with this.
Now, Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Roma Wines present... Suspense.
Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Vincent Price as star of The Name of the Beast. A suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Speer.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you Vincent Price in a remarkable tale of...
Suspense!
News and views in the world of art. Yesterday at the Deauville Galleries, a record-breaking crowd attended one of the most sensational exhibitions of recent years. Masterpiece of the show is a portrait by James Dorrance, titled The Name of the Beast. It's a savagely candid work. A face from which violence has shattered the last vestige of humanity. The tragic circumstances of the artist's death are too well known to review here. But at the same time, one cannot help speculating upon the essential mystery surrounding this remarkable canvas. What is the name of the beast?
The name of the beast was Krebs, Elmer Krebs. I found him in an evil waterfront dive, took him to my studio and made the first sketch for the portrait that night. I gave him money and he promised to return the next day. When he didn't show up, I went in search of him. He wasn't hard to trace. My search came to an end in a squalid room of a waterfront hotel.
Come in.
He didn't look up when I entered the room, but continued to sit there on the sagging, dingy bedstead, holding his head in his hands and gently moaning. I crossed the room and raised the blind to let in the daylight. Then I saw it. Blood. On his hands, on his shirt front, in his hair and beard. A horrible, sticky mass of blood. You didn't show up for our appointment today. I'm the painter you met last night, remember? You were going to sit for a portrait.
What do you want? You want your money back?
Certainly not. I want to finish my painting. I want you to come back to the studio.
You must be crazy.
Look here, it's very important for me to finish that painting. I'll make it worth your while.
Money? I don't need money. Not anymore.
Maybe I can help you in some other way. You're in some kind of trouble, that's obvious.
What business is that of yours?
You'd better wake up and pull yourself together. We'll have to get rid of those clothes some way or other, and I'll think of some way. What happened?
I told you it's none of your business. Why don't you leave me alone? I'm sick. All that blood.
The first thing we must do is clean up this mess here. Now get those clothes off, and the shoes, too. I'll make a parcel out of them and dump them in the river after dark. You'd better shave off that beard, too. They'll be looking for a man with a beard, you know.
Who will?
Why, the police, of course.
What makes you so sure of that?
I know more about you than you think I do.
You're bluffing.
Maybe, maybe not. But you're in no position to take chances. For all you know, I might be a witness. I might have seen you kill...
Shut up!
Temper, temper.
I told you I'm sick. I'm liable to do anything.
It wouldn't be smart for you to do anything to me, Elmer. I'm your only hope. You know that, don't you? You lost your head. You were clumsy. To get away with murder, you need a clear head. Look at the mistakes you've made already. Blood all over you. As good as a rope around your neck. Where did you hide the loot?
That's what you're after.
Then it was robbery. Somewhere close by, too. couldn't have gone far with all that blood on you without attracting attention.
Well?
It was in a shop, I imagine. That means they probably won't find the body till Monday morning.
What's all this third degree? You with the police?
On the contrary, Elmer. I'm going to save you from the police.
Huh?
I told you. I want to finish painting that portrait of you.
It don't make sense. All this just to paint some crazy picture.
Ah, but what a picture, Elmer. I've waited 20 years to paint this picture. Everything I've ever painted has been merely the preparation for this. I've worked alone, never exhibited a single canvas. Do you know what it is to work alone?
Yeah, I know.
Nobody knows your name, but one day, quite suddenly, a masterpiece explodes in the face of a jaded world. Like your murder, Elmer. After a life of petty crime, at last an act of yours really means something. Newspapers will headline it. The whole world will be clamoring to know your name. Exciting, isn't it?
Exciting?
Well, that's the way I feel about this portrait. I must finish the job. How do I know you won't take
those clothes to the cops instead of dumping them?
I'm taking a terrible chance walking out of here with a bundle of blood-stained clothes as it is. They'd fit me about as well as they fit you.
Okay, that's fair enough.
By the way, where did it happen?
The hock shop, number 23, next to the alley.
Was it necessary?
The old man came in and started firing a revolver right off. I don't pack no rod. There's nothing else to do. I grabbed the fire axe off the wall.
Oh, my. And I suppose the police have your fingerprints on file?
Yeah, I done time once.
What did you do with the axe?
Just dropped it there. I was sick, all that blood.
I suppose you left nice red fingerprints all over the place.
I didn't touch nothing. Maybe the windowsill going out.
That's the first place they'll look. And you're obviously in no condition to go back
there
now.
What are you trying to do? Buy yourself a nice murder rap?
My dear fellow, any intelligent man can get away with murder if he keeps his wits about him. You ought to be very grateful to me, Elmer. I'm going to take your clumsy crime and make it into a work of art.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star Vincent Price in The Name of the Beast by Robert Tallman. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Between the acts of suspense, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Yesterday, a happily married friend told me one of his favorite formulas for enjoying life. He said he never eats dinner while still burdened with the pressures of a busy day. Instead, he sits down for a few minutes, takes it easy, chats with his wife, and enjoys with her a glass or two of Roma California Sherry, the perfect first call to dinner. Yes, Roma Sherry before dinner is a pleasant custom millions now share with family and friends. For Roma Sherry is a glorious golden amber wine, soft and mellow on the tongue, so inviting with its pleasing nut-like taste. Roma Sherry makes mealtime more welcome, helps you anticipate the good food to come. And when friends drop in, there's no more gracious greeting than a glass of Roma Sherry. Tomorrow night, before dinner, share Roma Sherry with your family. It costs no more to serve Roma, America's favorite wine. So insist on Roma, R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Remember, more Americans enjoy Roma than any other wine.
And now Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Vincent Price as James Dorrance with Elliot Lewis as Krebs. In The Name of the Beast, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
The shoes of the beast were just my size. I wore them when I went on my errand that night. It was fortunate I did. Getting into the place was simple. It was an old-fashioned lock, and the skeleton key to my studio fitted it perfectly. The shop bell jangled when I opened the door. I made my way quickly along the dark rows of counters to the rear of the shop. A pair of dusty portieres provided it from the back room. I pulled them to behind me and snapped on my flashlight. The body, or what was left of it, lay in a heap in the center of the room. The floor, well, it was lucky I hadn't worn my own shoes. There would be tracks out of that place, red tracks. The axe lay near the old man's head. I picked up the axe and carried it over to the sink. I washed off what I could and smeared out the prints with the cotton gloves on my hands. Then I made a quick circuit of the room, taking in every surface. With the wet gloves, I smeared the prints on the safe handle, the windowsill, and the jimmy the murderer had so stupidly left behind him. Then I dropped the cotton gloves on the floor and left them there. No way to trace a pair of cheap cotton gloves. Now there was only one last thing to do. Walk around the block to dry the soles of those shoes and burn them in the stove when I got back to my studio. The handiwork of the beast would remain, but the name of the beast had been expunged. But I didn't burn the shoes, nor did I throw that bundle of clothing into the river as I had first planned to do that night. No, no. This would be an authentic portrait of a murderer in the very blood-stained garments of his crime. That will be all for today, Elmer.
How much longer does this go on?
Until the painting is finished. You can't set a time limit on the completion of a masterpiece, you know.
That don't look much like me.
You've forgotten. I made the first sketch before you shaved off your beard.
I don't like this picture. Did you have to paint in all that blood?
My dear fellow, no one in the world would ever recognize you as the man with the beard in this painting.
I don't like this picture. I don't like staying here. Look, what about that stuff? When can I start cashing in on it?
I should have thought I was paying you enough to live on.
Suppose I want to get married.
Well, that... What? Oh, good Lord, man. You mustn't even consider it. In the first place, I can't afford to support another person.
Who's asking you to support anybody? I got that stuff, haven't I? Well, I'm going to cash it in, that's all.
Listen to me, Elmer. If you try to unload as much as one piece of that loot, the police will be on your tail so fast. Oh, no, my friend. That stuff has got to stay where it is for some time to come.
You just say that so I'll have to depend on you, so you can paint that lousy picture.
Maybe. Oh, by the way, Elmer, I've never said anything about it before, but you never told me exactly what you did do with the loot.
The suitcase, I told you.
Yes, I know, in a locker at Grand Central, but where's the ticket?
That's one secret I'm keeping.
Well, all right. But you will promise me not to unload those jewels. Not for a while.
She keeps asking me, when are we going to get married? What am I going to tell her?
Oh, by the way, who is the lucky lady?
Jeannie. Her name's Jeannie Baker. Hey, wait a minute, though. She don't know anything about me. Not anything. If I ever catch you talking to her, so help me, I'll kill you.
You're a friend of Elmer's?
Well, not a friend exactly. I'm afraid this will be rather a shock to you. You're very close to Mr. Krebs.
Well, we're engaged to be married. What is it? Is he in some kind of trouble? Are you a detective?
Well, not exactly. You see, I represent the insurance company.
What insurance company?
State Indemnity. Our policyholder doesn't want to prosecute, but at the same
time... Prosecute?
Well, after all, the jewels were of considerable value.
What jewels?
Why, the jewels in the suitcase, in the locker at Grand Central. He did leave the ticket with you, didn't he?
Oh, well, yes, but I mean, he didn't tell me that... Well, he did say it was valuable and he didn't want to risk losing the ticket, but... How did you know about it?
My dear Miss Baker, we insurance investigators have ways of finding out these things. Now then, if you're a sensible young woman... And I can see that you're not only a sensible young woman, but a very beautiful one as well.
Mr. Dorrance, what has he done?
Well, I don't think he regarded it as a theft exactly. More of a loan, in all probability. After all, his aunt was a very old lady and...
You mean he stole this jewelry from his aunt?
Well, I wanted to spare you those exact words if I could. Actually, the lady would prefer not to prosecute. But of course, if we can secure the return of the property in no other way...
I suppose I'd be arrested, too, as an accessory or something.
I must say it was rather thoughtless of him to have involved you in this manner.
How do I know you're what you say you are?
I have credentials, of course. But I would rather take care of this unofficially, especially since this little talk with you. You're much too fine a person to be involved in a sordid affair like this.
I don't even know that suitcase has any jewels in it.
Then supposing we go there together and get it, Jeannie? Well, now let's have a look.
How are we going to...
Well, I think I have a key here that'll open it.
Those must be worth a fortune.
Yes, they are, Miss Baker. You understand our concern?
Yes. Close it up. I don't want to look at it anymore.
I'd like to have spared you this. You understand, of course, that I wouldn't dream of prosecuting... Not now that I've met you.
I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Dorrance. This is such a shock to me. How could he?
There. You're not the first innocent girl to be deceived by an unscrupulous fellow like that. How did you happen to become involved with him in the first place?
Oh, I was lonely. I have no friends here, and he came into the cafe where I wait to...
Oh, there now.
You won't let anything happen to me.
I promise you, I'll do anything to keep you from knowing another moment's unhappiness. That night, I worked feverishly, like a man possessed. But as I worked, an uncanny change came over the man in the portrait. There was something about it, something that terrified and at the same time fascinated me. Yet the more I tried to make it come right, the less it really looked like Krebs. I began to regret I had had him shave his beard, in spite of the risk involved. Being clean-shaven altered a man's appearance more than I thought. But that wasn't the real difficulty. The real trouble was Jeannie Baker. How could she ever have loved a beast like Krebs? A girl so gentle, so lovely. I tried not to think of her. But the image of Jeannie stood between me and the canvas. And the painting just would not come right. And as Krebs sat there sullenly posing for me, his eyes began to grow more and more cunning and suspicious. As though he could actually read my thoughts. He would jump up every time I laid down my brush and circle the portrait like an infuriated animal. Until finally, around 4 in the morning, he dropped off to snoring. I let him stay there. In the dawn light, I looked at the picture for the last time and draped the easel to shut it out of my sight. My masterpiece, for which I had become accessory after the fact of one murder and sowed the seeds of a second... was, I knew it now deep in my heart, a failure. I was obsessed now with only one resolve, to prevent the second murder, which by some instinct I knew was in Krebs' mind. At whatever cost to myself, no harm must come to Jeannie.
Mr. Dorrance, I've been told that artists are full of romantic notions, and the Bureau has dealt with a number of them in this neighborhood, as you can well imagine. But I must say that of all the pipe dreams that have been brought to me, yours is the most fantastic.
Oh, but listen, Inspector, you've got to believe me. That girl's life is in danger.
Yeah, we're checking on that. Now, let's check on a few other things, Mr. Dorrance. You say that on the night of the 12th, you met this man Krebs at a place called Louis.
Yes, sir.
And afterwards, you went with him to your studio and made a sketch of him for a portrait. All right, so far, so good. He promised to return the following day and sit again for the painting. Well, he failed to show up, so you sought him out at his hotel. Now the story really becomes incredible. He tells you he's committed a ghastly murder. He's covered in blood. You offer to help him get away with the murder in order to finish the portrait. Oh, now really, Mr. Dorrance, you painters need publicity as bad as all that.
But, Inspector, I tell you, I have all the evidence.
Where?
At my studio.
Where's this man Krebs? Except for the portrait you say you painted of him, I can't find a shred of evidence that he exists. Now, just a minute. Yes, Sergeant?
They've picked up the girl.
Good. Send her in.
Oh, she'll tell you. She'll tell you who Krebs is.
Oh, come in, Miss Baker. We won't detain you long. Miss Baker, do you know this man? I say, do you know this man?
It's all right, my dear. Speak up.
Yes. His name is Elmer Krebs.
few minutes later, they let me go, dismissing me as a harmless crackpot. Jeannie walked out of the station with me, clinging to my arm with solicitude, as one might act towards a beloved and mentally ill relative. Why did you do it?
Elmer came to my apartment last night. He told me the whole story.
But then why?
He was boasting about how he's pinned the crime on you. Don't you see? Everything you've done to save him has incriminated you. The bloodstained clothes, even the loot.
Oh, I'm tired. I don't know.
Well, listen to me. He'll always be a threat to us, to our happiness. He's safe. The police don't even know he exists. They don't even know what he looks like.
There's still the portrait. It's not a masterpiece, but they can identify him from it.
I see. Darling, you didn't mind my rechristening you?
You once loved a man named Krebs.
And I still love a man named Krebs.
Then it's all right. For that, I'd do anything.
Put this in your overcoat pocket. It'll keep you safe, darling.
What? Oh, no, no, I...
It'll keep you safe, darling.
He was there in my studio when I got in that evening, waiting for me. I had more or less expected it. I hadn't expected to find him in such a cheerful frame of mind. He had pulled the drape off of the painting and was walking around it, viewing it from every angle.
Hi, Dorrance.
How did you get in here?
Through the door. No more window jobs for me, Dorrance. The picture. How about that? Got a new model, huh?
What? The picture? Oh, it's no good. By the way, it's finished now. You won't need to come here anymore.
You'll say.
I'll get you the suitcase. I suppose it'll be safe for you to cash that stuff.
I already found the suitcase, Dorrance.
Oh? Well, take it along with you, then.
It's over there on the table. I opened it up.
Well?
Did you think I'd take it without checking on the contents?
What are you talking about?
What'd you do with the rocks, Dorrance?
Rocks?
You took the rocks, the jewelry. There's nothing left there but the settings, a pile of junk.
Listen, Krebs, I swear I never opened that suitcase but once, just after we took it out of the locker.
She's in it with you.
Listen, Krebs, you can think whatever you want to about me, but keep Jeannie out of it.
Keep Jeannie out of it? That's a laugh.
I mean what I say. Krebs, where are you going?
To our place. If she has those rocks, I'm going to get
Krebs, come back here.
I've got a job to do.
Krebs, if you go out of that door, I warn you. All right. I dragged his body inside the door and left it there. Then I dropped the revolver Jeannie had given me back in my overcoat pocket and left my studio. For the last time, as I closed the door on the room, it seemed that the face in the portrait was grinning at me in hideous mockery. I had meant to go straight to the police and give myself up, but I must have known in my heart that I wouldn't. Instead, I walked, and my feet took me almost against my will to the house on Grove Street, the house where Jeannie lived. I had roused her from sleep, and she seemed rather cross.
What's the big idea, barging in here this time of night?
I had to see you, Jeannie.
Well?
That was an unlucky name you gave me, Jeannie.
What's happened?
I shot him. You gave me a murderer's name, and now I am a murderer.
So you really did it. I wondered if you'd have the guts.
Jeannie! Oh,
what do you want me to do, put on black and cry myself to death?
You loved him once.
Who said so?
You were going to marry him.
Maybe. I thought he was smart once. I said I'd marry him if he pulled a really big job. I might have kept my word, but he bungled it. What's worse, he involved me. When I found out he'd planted that stuff on me...
You knew. You knew all the time.
Oh, so what? So what? You'll get your cut.
Oh, Krebs was right. You did take those stones, and I killed a man for you. To save you.
What did you do with the gun?
It's in my overcoat pocket. I was going to the police.
Oh, you sap. Why didn't you leave the gun there? Make it look like suicide.
It was, in a way, wasn't it, Jeannie? I'm Krebs now. Dorrance is dead. You planned it very nicely.
Oh, stop. Stop trying to be deep. Doesn't matter what your name is. Either way, you've messed it up. Anybody have a key to your place?
No.
And we still have time.
Time for what?
The body! Any intelligent person can get away with murder if he keeps his wits about him. You told Elmer that.
Yes, I told Elmer that.
You're scared to go back there, aren't you? Do you want me to do it for you?
No. No, I'll do it. I must do it.
Here. Mustn't forget your overcoat.
No. No, I mustn't forget my overcoat. It'll keep me... It'll keep me safe. Goodbye, Jeannie.
two stiffs. Hmm. What a shambles.
Looks as if he'd shot this guy and then bumped himself off. Who are they?
I don't know the other one. This is a guy that came into headquarters Saturday. You know, the artist.
Huh? Well, there must have been something to his story after all.
Here's a note he left.
You see. Dear Inspector, the portrait I told you about is standing on the easel facing the window so you can see it in the light. James Dorrance.
I guess this must be it here.
He said it identified the murderer. Is it a good likeness?
Gee, I don't know. You look at it.
Why, that's a woman.
Yeah, it's that dame we picked up. The little waitress. Hey, but look, it's got men's clothes on. Bloody. And the way he's made the face all twisted and ugly. She was a good-looking kid.
Yeah, she was.
He must have been cracked.
I guess he must have been.
A thing like that makes you wonder, don't it?
Yeah, a thing like that makes you wonder.
The discerning art lover will recognize Doran's painting as more than a mere portrait. It's the human soul stripped naked, and its dark and deep and secret places shown in all their morbid brooding fascination. But still one cannot help wondering, what is the name of the beast? Did the woman in the portrait exist, or was she only the creature of the artist's fevered imagination? Our only clue is in a quotation which the artist caused to be printed in the exhibition catalog.
And he causeth all to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell save that he had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of man.
Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Before we hear again from Vincent Price, the star of The Name of the Beast, tonight's suspense play, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines with a tip for you men. Every wife loves surprises. Little unexpected deeds that reflect thoughtfulness. So tomorrow night, boost your stock with her. Solve her problem of how to brighten weekend dining. Add to your own mealtime pleasure, too. Take home a bottle of delicious Roma California Burgundy. One sip will convince you both that red, robust Roma Burgundy is the perfect table mate for stews, spaghetti, or baked beans. For Roma Burgundy brings out hidden flavors, adds rare goodness to every morsel. Yes, gentlemen, Roma Burgundy can make a hero of you on two counts, for being thoughtful and for solving a mealtime problem. And Roma wine, America's first choice, costs no more than ordinary wines. Remember, for greater dining pleasure tomorrow, take home Roma Burgundy. Insist on Roma, R-O-M-A, Roma wine, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is Vincent Price. Next Thursday, our friend Keenan Wynn will be your star on Suspense in what sounds like a very exciting play, which all takes place on a bus. A bus making a return trip from the state insane asylum. I know you won't want to miss it next Thursday. And now, let me add my voice on behalf of a very great and wonderful cause. The pennies, the dimes, and the dollars that you give when you buy Easter Seals give crippled children their chance for happy living. Help a crippled child to walk again. Buy your share of Easter Seals tomorrow. Thank you.
Vincent Price appeared through courtesy of 20th Century Fox and will soon be seen in their production, Dragonwick. Next Thursday, same time, Roma Wines will bring you Keenan Wynn as star of Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrill.
You know what's better than reading a great magazine? Reading a great magazine that also helps you fight poverty. Megaphone Magazine is sold by homeless and low-income vendors on the streets of Vancouver and Victoria. Vendors buy magazines for 75 cents and sell them for $2. It's flexible, low-barrier work for people who may not have access to traditional jobs. Download the Megaphone app to find vendors and buy the magazine, even when you don't have change.
I'm going away. Look into my eyes. The last Sunday of every month from 11 to 5. Won't you hear with me?
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense.
Effie, what the devil are you up to?
I'm just looking at the moon. It's green.
Close the shutters at once, you little fool, and come away from the window.
Green as a beer bottle. Green as emeralds. Green as leaves with sunshine striking through them. And green as grass to lie on.
Effie!
All right, I'm closing the shutters.
You know that those shutters are not to be touched. Not for 5 more years, at least.
I only wanted to look at the moon.
I only wanted to look at the moon. Only wanted to die like a little fool and make me that much more ashamed of you. Here, count yourself. Good Lord.
Oh, just the radium dial on this old wristwatch I keep in my pocket.
You imbecile. You incredible imbecile.
Sorry.
I do suppose you still realize the sort of world you're living in.
A world where hydrogen bombs were tossed about with such reckless abandon that even now the sky is hazed with death? Radioactive dust that plays fantastic tricks with the light of sun and moon? A world where the only chance for existence was to retire to shelter underground? Shelter seized by the strong and defended by them against the desperate hordes of the dying until there were no more of those? A world that consists only of waiting and enduring. No beauty or tenderness, just fear and guilt. Oh yes, I realize what sort of world I live in.
You understand too, I suppose, that we were allowed to reclaim this ground-level apartment only because the committee believed us to be responsible people. And because I've been making a damn good showing lately.
Yes, Hank.
I thought you were eager for privacy. You want to go back to the basement tenements?
No, Hank.
Then why aren't you more careful? I've told you a million times, Effie, that glass is no protection against the dust that's outside that window. The lead shutter must never be touched. If you make one single slip like that and it gets around, the committee will send us back to the lower levels without blinking an eye. And they'll think twice before trusting me with any important jobs.
I'm sorry, Hank.
Sorry? What's the good of being sorry? The only thing that counts is never to make a slip. Why the devil do you do such things, Effie? What drives you to it?
It's just that it's so dreadful being cooped up like this, shut away from the sky and the sun. I'm just hungry for a little beauty.
And do you suppose I'm not? Don't you suppose I want to get outside too and be carefree and have a good time? But I'm not so damned selfish about it. I want my children to enjoy the sun, and my children's children. Don't you see that that's the all-important thing, and that we have to behave like mature adults and make sacrifices for it?
Yes, Hank.
You're a fine one to talk about hunger for beauty. You haven't forgotten, have you, Effie, that until last month, the committee was so concerned about your sterility that they were about to enter my name on a list of those waiting to be allotted a free woman? Very high on the list, too.
No, I haven't forgotten.
But now that you're going to have a child, that's all in the background again. Do you know, Effie, that when I first came in, I had some very good news for you? I'm about to become a member of the junior committee. The announcement will be made at the banquet tonight. So brighten yourself up and put on your best dress. I want the other juniors to see what a handsome wife the new member has got. Well, get a move on!
I'm terribly sorry, Hank, but you'll have to go alone. I'm not well.
Oh, there you go again! First that infantile, inexcusable business of the shutters, and now this! No feelings for my reputation at all. Don't be ridiculous, Effie. You're coming.
I'm terribly sorry, but I really can't. I'd just be sick. I wouldn't make you proud of me at all.
Of course you won't. As it is, I have to spend half my energy running around making excuses for you. Why you're so odd. Why you always seem to be ailing. Why you're always stupid and snobbish and say the wrong thing. But tonight's really important, Effie. It will cause a lot of bad comment if the new member's wife isn't present. You know how just a hint of sickness starts the old radiation disease rumor going. You've got to come, Effie. Oh, for heaven's sake, come on! This is just a silly mood. As soon as you get going, you'll snap out of it. There's nothing really wrong with you at all.
Hank, please.
Really?
Yes.
Well, of course, that's the way it is. So you don't care enough about your old husband's success to make one supreme effort in spite of feeling bad?
I just can't go out tonight, under any circumstances.
Well, it can't be helped, naturally. And I certainly wouldn't want you to go if you weren't able to enjoy it. So you hop right into bed and get a good rest. I'll run over to the men's dorm to freshen up.
Oh, Hank, that's not necessary.
No, really. It's no trouble at all. I don't want you to have to make any effort at all. Incidentally, Jim Barnes isn't going to be able to come to the banquet either. Touch of the old flu, he tells me, of all things. I got a bit sharp with you, I'm afraid, Effie. I'm sorry about that. I was excited about my new job, and I guess that was why things upset me. Made me feel let down when I found out you weren't feeling as good as I was. Oh, selfish of me. Now you get into bed right away and get well. Don't worry about me a bit. I know you'd come if you possibly could, and I know you'll be thinking of me. Well, I must be off now. You'll be completely alone for the next 4 hours.
No, it couldn't have been. I must be seeing things. Still, I should look and be sure. It was just an illusion, some silly romantic dream. There couldn't be anything alive outside. There hasn't been for 2 whole years. Then, there's no harm in looking just once more, I suppose. It's so hard to see through the glass. Maybe if I open the window just for a moment. Nothing.
Is it tears I get for a welcome, or are those only to greet God's own breath, the air? Don't be afraid.
I'm not.
Then why don't you let me in?
I don't know.
It's okay. I don't bite. Go on.
The window. Close it, please.
All right. It's a snug enough place you and your man have. Or is it that this is just a free love town or a harem spot? Or just a military post? But let's not talk about such things now. Soon enough I'll be scared to death for both of us. Best enjoy the kick of meeting. Which is always good for 20 minutes at the least. you food?
Yes, I'll fix you something.
Something quick, please.
All right.
Thank you.
What's it like up there? Outside, I mean.
Oh, it's a wonderland for sure. More amazing than you tomb folk could ever imagine. A veritable fairyland.
No, really.
I mean it. You think the bombs and the dust made only death and ugliness. That was true at first. But then, just as the doctors foretold, they changed the life in the seeds and loins that were brave enough to stay. Wonders bloomed and walked. Do any of you ever venture outside?
A few of the men are allowed to for short trips in special protective suits to hunt for canned food, fuel, batteries, and things like that.
Aye. And those blind salt slugs would never see anything but what they're looking for. They'd never see the garden where a dozen buds bloom where just one did before, and the flowers have petals a yard across with stingless bees as big as sparrows gently supping their nectar. House cats, grown spotted and huge as leopards, stalk through those gardens, but they're gentle beasts, no more harmful than the rainbow-scaled snakes that glide around their paws, for the dust burned all the murder out of them. As it burned itself out. I've even made up a little poem about that. It starts, "Fire can hurt me, or water, or the weight of earth, but the dust is my friend." Oh, yes, and then the robins like cockatoos and squirrels like a princess's ermine, all under their treasure chest of sun and moon and stars that the dust's magic powder changes from ruby to emerald to sapphire and amethyst and then back again. Oh, and then the new children.
You're telling the truth? You're not making it up?
I am not. And if you could catch a glimpse of one of the new children, you'd never doubt me again. They have long limbs as brown as coffee would be if it had lots of fresh cream in it, and smiling, delicate faces, and the whitest teeth and the finest hair. They're so nimble that I, a sprightly man and somewhat enlivened by the dust, feel like a cripple beside them. And their thoughts dance like flames and make me feel like a very imbecile. Of course, they have seven fingers on each hand and eight toes on each foot, but that they're more beautiful for that. They have large pointed ears that the sun shines through. They play in the garden all day long, slipping amongst the green leaves and the blooms, but they're so swift that you can hardly see them unless one chooses to stand still and look at you. For that matter, you have to look a bit hard for all these things I'm telling you.
But is it true?
Every word of it. What's your name? Mine's Patrick.
Effie.
No, that can't be. Euphemia? That's what Effie is short for. Your name is Euphemia.
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 Yes?
I...
Don't either of you move.
Hank!
You whore. You filthy little whore. And not even with a man of the community. No, it had to be with a pariah. A pariah!
I know what you're thinking, man, but you're quite wrong. I just happened to be coming by hungry tonight, a lonely tramp, and knocked at the window. Your wife was a bit foolish and let kindheartedness get the better of prudence.
Don't think you've pulled the wool over my eyes, Effie. Don't think I don't know why you're suddenly going to have a child after 4 long years. Even that business of carrying the wristwatch in your pocket instead of on your arm.
A neat bit of camouflage, Effie. Very neat. And telling me it was my child, when all the while you've been seeing him for months!
Man, you're mad. I've not even touched her.
Pretending you were going to give me a healthy child, when all the while you knew it would be a thing like him! I should shoot him down. I should kill him this instant for the contaminated pariah he is.
Then you'd be killing the bringer of the best news we've ever had. Oh, Hank, forget your silly wrong jealousy and listen to me. Patrick here has something wonderful to tell us.
What do you mean?
I mean that we no longer need fear the dust. It never really did hurt people the way the doctor said it would. Remember how it was with me, Hank? The exposure I had and recovered from, although the doctor said I wouldn't at first. And without even losing my hair, Hank, those who were brave enough to stay outside and who weren't killed by terror and suggestion and panic, they adapted to the dust. They changed, but they changed for the better. Everything.
Effie! Effie! He told you lies.
Everything that grew or moved was purified. You men going outside have never seen it because you've never had eyes for it. You've been blinded to beauty, to life itself. And now all the power in the dust has gone and faded. Anyway, burned itself out. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see, Hank, we can all go out now. We need never fear the dust again. Patrick is living proof of that. Look at him. Not a scar or a sign, and he's been out in the dust for years. How could he be this way if the dust hurt the brave? Oh, believe me, Hank. Believe what you see. Test it if you want. Test Patrick here.
Effie, you're all mixed up. You don't know what you're talking about.
Look.
Just test him.
All right. You. Can you count?
Can I count? Do you take me for a complete simpleton, man? Of course I can count.
Then count yourself.
Count myself, should I? Is this a kindergarten? But if you want me to, I'm willing. I've two arms and two legs. That's four. And 10 fingers and 10 toes. You'll take my word for them. That's 24. A head, 25. And 2 eyes and a nose and a mouth.
With this, I mean. The Geiger counter.
Very well.
Enough radioactives to kill 1,000 men. Freak! Freak!
No!
Have we listened to this racket long enough? That's right. You both do well to cringe from me, for I'm death itself. Even in death, I could kill you like a snake. Yes, I'm a freak, as the gentleman so wisely said. That's what one doctor who dared talk with me for a minute told me before he kicked me out. He couldn't tell me why, but somehow the dust doesn't kill me. Because I'm a freak, you see. Just like the man who ate nails and walked on fire and ate arsenic and stuck themselves through with pins. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen, only not too close, and examine the man who dust can't harm. Rappuccini's child, brought up to date. His embrace, death. And now, I'll get out and leave you in your damned lead cave.
Wait!
What?
When we were together earlier, you didn't act as if...
We... When we were together earlier, I wanted what I wanted. You don't suppose I'm a bloody saint, do you?
But all the beautiful things you told me...
Oh, that... Just a line I've found that women fall for. They're all so bored and so starved for beauty, as they generally put it.
Even the garden!
What's outside is just a little worse than either of you can imagine. The garden's all up here, in my head.
Oh. that's beautiful. But you, Patrick, you're worse. He only killed beauty once. But you brought it to life just so you could kill it all over again. Oh, I can't stand it. I won't stand it. You've been lying to us. The garden's there. I know it is, but you don't want to share it with anyone.
No, 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 Euphemia. It's hell out there, believe me. I wouldn't lie to you about it.
Wouldn't lie to me? You've done nothing but lie to me.
Effie!
I can't be cooped up here any longer, and I won't now that I know. I'm going to the garden.
No!
Effie, come back! Come back! I love you, Effie! Come back!
Come back, Euphemia. You'll be safe if you come back right away. Come back to your home. Go out and get her, man. For if I go out for her, I warn you, I won't bring her back.
But
she said something about having stood the dust better than most. That's enough for me. As you wish.
Fire can't hurt me, or water, or the weight of earth, but the dust is my friend.
Effie.
So ends The Moon is Green by John C. Alsadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions and recorded at Melrose Music in Hollywood, California. Tonight's radio drama was adapted for radio by John C. Alsadek and Dana Perry Hayes from the short story by Fritz Leiber Jr. Jane Casserly was Effie. Joe Ackman was Hank. Darren Jacobs was Patrick. I'm John C. Alsadek. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
Let me refresh your memory. Russians. That's right. Russians, Ruskies, communists, communists. Oh, now you remember.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Russian Tim, and I'm the host of weekly punk rock radio show called Rocket from Russia. Every Tuesday, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., Rocket from Russia is aired on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, or CITR.ca, anywhere where internet is paid for.
And you are tuned into CITR.